Thank you, Racetech, racetech.com, presenting sponsor of these podcasts. They've been with us for a long time. They also present the sponsor of the LVK, More Than Moto Pod. So thank you to the folks at Racetech. Get your suspension work done. Get your motor work done. Racetech works tightly with the Team Solitaire guys that you're going to hear about in this podcast. Use the code, save some money, give your bike some love. Racetech, racetech.com.
A Pulp MX Network production.
Welcome to the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, and Motorsport.com on RacerXOnline.com. With your continuing gracious support of our sponsors, we're thriving at over 1,800 podcasts delivered with over 20 million downloads. Click the Amazon banner on Pulp MX to help us out. Donate via Patreon if it suits you. And as always, enrich your moto lifestyle by working with the sponsors who support us. The original Moto Podcast, featuring legends of the past, stars of today, season previews, race reviews, introspection, opinion, facts, and laughs. Here's the voice bringing it all to you, Steve Mathis.
Save that dedication, your frustration.
Thanks for listening to the Fly Racing RacerX podcast with Chris Elliott, part owner of the Team Solitaire team. Thanks to Fly Racing, man. 25 years of Fly, and whether it's Justin Brayton winning in Daytona, RJ Hampshire winning Supercrosses this year, Trey Canard championships, man, Fly Racing, J-Law, lots of championships and wins and titles with the guys at Fly Racing over the years. FlyRacing.com, whether it's the Formula S helmet, man, or the F4 boots, Zone Pro goggles, all the gear head to toe, they've got you covered. And at great prices, great availability, and lots of selections as well. Lots of colors and styles. Something will make you happy at Fly Racing. FlyRacing.com. You can get it at Motorsport.com. Or, of course, as well, your local dealer. So thanks to the folks at Fly, man, for coming on board. They've been a sponsor of these pods since, I don't know, like 2010 or something? 13 years? 14 years? It's been a long time, and thank you to Fly, man. Great company, great guys. Renthal as well, Honda HRC using Renthal. Of course, Red Bull KTM, Monster Energy Kawasaki, sprockets, bars, grips, chains, mountain bike stuff. They've got a lot of things going on at Renthal. And, of course, you know the name, you know the product. Chances are you've used some of it to great success. So thanks to the folks at Renthal, Renthal.com. Check out their chains and sprockets. I know they're known for their bars, but they do great work with the other stuff as well. Renthal.com. Maxxis tires as well, MXSTs, developed by Jeremy McGrath. Soft intermediate to hard terrain tires are out now. They got a paddle, of course. They got the complete range of tires at Maxxis. Light truck tires as well, trailer tires, mountain bike tires. Maxxis.com for more information on that. Motorsport.com will tell you more about later in the show. But yeah, great place to get Maxxis or Renthal. Motorsport.com. All right, here's Chris Elliott, kind of taking you behind the scenes of a team ownership, financial-wise, rider selection-wise, working with the promoters, all of that. Really interesting and funny guy. And, one of these teams that you want to cheer for. You know what I mean? Team Solitaire. All right, here we go. Okay, here we go on the Fly Racing RacerX podcast with a fellow Canadian of mine. And I've been wanting to talk to this gentleman for a while about different things when it comes to the Heartbeat Hot Sauce Team Solitaire Yamaha team. Chris Elliott, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm good, man. It's sunny Nevada. The Leafs just beat the wheels off the Golden Knights, and I'm talking to you.
Oh, it was a beautiful game. Wife not happy. Wife angry. And so that means it was beautiful. Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. So,
did you guys go?
Yeah, we went. Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Six-game winning streak, you know. So feeling good about our Toronto Maple Leafs. Maybe, Elliott, maybe this is the year we get the cup.
Oh, man. We're going to Toronto if that's the case.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm going streaking if that's the case. thanks for doing this. Appreciate it. Lots to get into when it comes to your team. And I really, we'll talk about the season a little bit to start, but I really just want to dive into yourself and Ryan Clark, co-owners of the team, and how you make it work and how it's going and the thought processes behind different things. I feel like you guys, look, I've been around a long time. There's a lot of teams that come in, over promise, under deliver. They don't pay the riders. They break contracts, et cetera, et cetera. And you guys, I feel like, are like one of the teams that are like, look, man, yeah, we can't pay that. And then like Robbie Wageman has to go ride for Bar X, and then Robbie comes back. And you guys, you know, do what you say you're going to do. You got a nice little program going there, good sponsors. And I like that because, yeah, we've got a lot of shysters in the pits over the years, Elliot. I don't know if you're aware of this. So,
yeah, I appreciate that. No, there is, and you hear the stories, and it's always – honestly, it kind of bums me out a bit. And it ends up being kind of a situation where, like, I always make a joke. I laugh when I'm in the will call line at A1 every year because there's so many people that are sitting there that owe each other money that don't talk to each other.
Right, yeah. It is weird. It's a weird thing.
Yeah, but no, we did. Yeah, to what you said, it's like we just, I think that came from Ryan and then also me. I mean, like, we're just, I think, first and foremost, we're like good people and honest people. But Ryan's been there, done that. And I think for him, like, he had those experiences and he knew what that did to, mm-hmm. you know, in his mind, his career.
Yeah.
So for us, it's always been like, hey, man, we're going to be honest with you. It's, you know, we're a program where it's dollar in, dollar out. Like, we don't spend our own money and we don't overpromise anything. And I think that's, mm-hmm. you know, when you're trying to get riders, sometimes they don't even want to hear it. And our parents, it's just like, I wish they'd listen. Cause it's like, yeah, they say they're going to pay you this money or you're going to have that. And then you go there and guess what? You got paid your first paycheck and then it was always in the mail and the bike was garbage and it was this and that. So yeah, for us, it's like, hey man, this is what we are.
Yeah.
This is what we have for a budget. The biggest thing for us is your bike. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I mean, we're not transactional. Unless you get on a team like Mitch or one of those big teams, I mean, you're not going to make money that is like life-changing at like a month-to-month, year-to-year, mm-hmm. definitely not life. So it's like, you got to be transitional. And for us, it's like, we want to push you to that next level. And that's kind of how we always operated.
Yeah. And it's got to be tough at times because you probably do lose out on riders, right? And you do lose out on guys. And it's like, man, listen, you come here, we'll give you a good bike. You know, something that's competitive, and you know, the Yamaha itself as a base platform is really good, and you'll make some money and you know, hopefully you can get a better ride. And but these guys don't want to hear that.
No, and you know what, I'll say it, like Robbie last year, like I didn't want Robbie to go. Right. I wanted to talk Robbie into staying, but at some point you have to be like, it's like letting your kid fall off the couch after the jump on it a million times. It's like, you know what, you have to go fall off the couch.
Yeah.
So And this year, you know, like, and it's nothing against Bar X or where he went, but it's like, we knew what made Robbie tick, right? Mm-hmm. And the Yamaha is a really, really, really good motorcycle. And we felt he had a lot of momentum going in 2022. He was just on that cusp of like, and let's face it, he may never get a factory ride, but there was obviously talk about it.
Many times he was the first guy, you know, yeah. in the group of a privateer of the factory riders. Absolutely.
Yeah. And he left for whatever his reasons were. And we just said, good luck. We love you. All the best. And we cheered for him. And now he's back. And, you know, the first few little weeks of the season, like there's definitely, we've noticed that there's been a regression. And it's like, sometimes it's more about the bigger picture. And in this sport specifically, I think you need to look more long-term than like, let's say $5,000 or $10,000 here or there, or mm-hmm. whatever the situation is for each particular rider. But yeah, it's a bummer losing on those riders. But I mean, in this case, specifically with Robbie, he came back and we're kind of back on track now and we're happy to have him.
How many years have you guys had the team for?
Oh, gosh. I mean, we just did something with Clinton Fowler. So Ryan had it for probably 8 years pre-Chris.
Yep.
And then we kicked it back up kind of like me and him back in 2017.
Yeah. I was thinking more of the rebrand of 2017. I don't know. I think Clark's first time around, and I did a podcast with him. You guys can search it. A really interesting podcast with Ryan. I've known him forever. I maybe did it 2 or 3 years ago. And I think I remember him telling me this, I think on the podcast, his team, I mean, it almost bankrupted him. Like it was tough to do. And I think he took all the things that he kind of learned from running that big semi and the big team and doing the things that we just talked about. And then, you know, sort of was like, I'm doing it much, much smaller, more efficiently.
Well, and I think the risks were higher back then in the sense of like the money, money was easier to be had then.
Yeah.
So the mistakes were at a higher level if you made mistakes. And then also I think he was in that little era of the recession.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was a rough go. And when we got together, just the Canadian to me too, it's like, hey dude, it's dollar in, dollar out. That's the only way we can do this.
Yeah.
And it's going to suck. Like, dude, there's times where, you know, we should have had a new canopy, or we should have done this, or we should have done that. But it's like you sit back with a cold beer in your hand. You're like, hey, man, we both have kids to put through college.
Yeah.
We're not going to spend that money on some at times ungrateful dirt bikers to go get 13th or 15th or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So like, yeah, it's definitely cool having him have that experience before, and definitely lends in a helping hand to not making those mistakes now, for sure.
So you brought back Cole Thompson from last year, and you rehired Robbie. How's this season going for those two guys? Robbie had his best race last week, the last race.
Yeah, kind of like what I was saying earlier. Honestly, we're kind of dealing with like getting out of that regression we kind of feel like he showed back up with. And he's getting better, starts getting better, confidence coming back. But like as a whole, both of them, no, they're both kind of dealing with something injury-wise. And honestly, it's kind of disappointing. But also too, like, again, getting back to Ryan, we're just having this talk the other day. Like, I, you know, 2020 and then with Cole last year, like, I guess I kind of started taking like top 10s for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is like for a team like ours, man, like I always joke around, we're the Goonies, right? Like we're underdogs. Like our budget is 1/100th of what like a Mitch is or something. So when we get a top 10, I mean, those guys are beating guys that their chances are like their salary is the entire budget of a race team probably at times. Right. So it's neat. And I think that, yeah, it hasn't been the greatest year, but also too, I'm kind of changing my perspective of like what my expectation is. So I think the guys are riding good. They're healthy. We've had a good presence with the bikes and you know, like media and stuff like that. So all in all, it's been a good year. I'd like them both to get back into like kind of getting into the groove of just top 10s, and that's kind of automatic, but maybe I'm crazy.
No, I don't think so. Heartbeat Hot Sauce, you had them last year. You sent me some of their products. Very, very good. I'm not a hot sauce guy, but I've kind of started using a little bit more of it. My wife loves it. And they went in deeper with you guys. Talk about finding Heartbeat, how it came together, how pumped they are in our sport.
Yeah, so Heartbeat, honestly, so it came completely random. And I've told the story before, and it sounds like a lie, but I swear it's true. So on our Twitter, someone reached out to me, and it wasn't a Heartbeat like hot sauce branded person. His name was Tanner. And he said, "Hey, I think my boss would be into getting involved with the race team." I'm like, okay, cool. So, I mean, we get those messages a lot. I'm sure you know that. It's like, "Hey, a couple boxes of t-shirts and some coupons." It's like, I kind of put it on the back burner, did some research on it, and I realized they were from Thunder Bay, Ontario. So, fun fact about Thunder Bay, Ontario, that's where myself and your friend Shane Drew grew up.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, this is weird. So, you know, about talking more and more and more, and ultimately met Al and Nancy, and they jumped on board. And honestly, it's just like perfect timing, stars aligned of a company that's just growing faster than they can ever imagine. Mm-hmm. They're involved in NASCAR, UFC, getting into Walmarts, Costco's, and motorsport enthusiast. He's really into like stock cars back home. Takes it very, very serious. So he has that kind of like motorsport love and just competitive and loves to go racing. So they actually just ran at the Daytona 500. I think they led like 11 laps in their car.
Okay.
So
yeah,
it's definitely really cool. But yeah, just honestly, it's all because of Twitter.
Yeah, that's funny. And then so what's he say about our sport and the return he's seeing, the buzz? I'm sure you give him some numbers. What's it been like for them as a hot sauce company?
So I mean, he does look at some stuff within our sport and just completely shake his head,
right,
as far as what we're allowed to do. And but as a whole, I think he's seen a return. The thing is like, so he, before he came to us, he was with the UFC and NASCAR, right? And he still is, but I think obviously that's a much higher level. So he sees what we could do for the price points here, and it's definitely enticing him. And I think he's seen a return. The biggest thing that we found that it's been helpful, it's like, it's a product that everyone consumes, right? For the most part, it's a very consumable product. The price point is low, and it's not like a saturated product in the sport itself, right? It's not like another energy drink.
No, yeah.
So we found, honestly, like, we've brought in sponsors before, and I've honestly been kind of disappointed in fans' reaction or supporters' reaction. But with Heartbeat Hot Sauce, honestly, man, like they've been glowing about the numbers and how many people put in orders and say, "Hey, Heartbeat Hot Sauce, Team Solitaire," or whatever it may be.
Okay, so yeah, so it's working. It's working.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is an odd combination. Like when I saw you last year with it, you know, you filled me in on it a little bit. And yeah, I'm glad to see it's working. What does he shake his head at a little bit? Like sample stuff and things like that?
So we were actually given the okay on sample stuff. We were allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. We had to make special bottles. It's more or less the accessibility as far as what we're allowed to do when we're at the races. Like I don't know if you've noticed, but so this year they've really clamped down on video.
Yeah, and vloggers. Yeah.
And basically they're saying it's an NBC thing. And I guess I understand there's legalities behind it, but it's like, for me, it's like, hey, you know, by definition, I basically get parked in a different county, and I understand why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by definition, I'm not going to get TV time, and I guess I understand why. You know, go down the list of why I'm not going to get certain things, and I totally understand it, and Feld has a business to run. But does it really matter if we put out a 35-second sizzle reel at 5 o'clock on Saturday
yeah.
with Cole and Robbie's laps at 2:30 in the afternoon in Anaheim?
Right. No, shouldn't.
And yeah. it's a hard no, and I'm bummed. And that's one thing that they've kind of been like, really? Like, okay. So that's the one thing this year. And just but they like we got lots of TV time in Arizona. That was pretty cool. They're getting better at doing those kind of things mm-hmm. and seeing when we're bringing in outside sponsors.
Yeah.
And they're kind of rewarding that a little bit more. So that's been nice.
Well, listen, I mean, it's you got to tip the visor to them a little bit because years ago, and I've ranted about this a bunch, like Jimmy Albertson beat Dungeon in LCQ. And Ralph and Jeff barely said his name and never mentioned the team. And think if you're Chris Crossland, at that time it was Crossland Racing, and you're spending all this money to go racing, you have the dream scenario happening where your rider is beating a factory rider and you get zero mentions. You know what I mean? You get it if your rider's not doing anything, you get the – but they've come away since then, and thankfully that it's better than it used to be. So
no, you know what? Like I always say, like you always hear people getting mad at like, you know, either it's like Mike or Dave, and it's like you think Mike or Dave want to do that. I mean, it's a Feld's a company, right? They own Disney on Ice, they own Monster Jam. It's basically spreadsheets and boardrooms, right?
Yeah.
So there's always going to be that disconnect from like I think to me this is the biggest deal in the world. To them, it's not even on the docket that day. So I mean, to be clear, like. They're great with us and Sean and Joe. And I think they noticed that we like put a lot of effort into like doing, even like with media, we do like outside the sport media and we bring it in and they get pretty stoked on that. So I think they definitely reward us in that regard.
Okay.
So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's nice. What's your deal with Yamaha? You guys have been a Yamaha team for a long time. How's that support gone with the Blue Crew dudes and how much do you have to fight for more bikes and parts? You know, do they recognize, you know, the value you brought to them? How does it go for that?
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? Ever since Jim came in, it's been night and day different.
Jim Roach,
you know,
yep,
and we,
yep.
Oh yeah. Yep. And like, I've said this before, like I'd run through a wall for Jim cause he's just a real dude. And mm-hmm. like, I know I don't like have to fight for anything. Cause I know that if he could do it, he'll do it.
Yep.
Right. It's just like with Feld. I mean, he's, it's a boardroom and a spreadsheet, right? So it's like, and to me, it's the biggest deal in the world. To him, it's just a small part of his day. Right. So, we appreciate everything they do for us and our support has grown every year. So that's been really cool. Cause prior to Jim, I mean, it was basically, we just rode the bike cause it was the best bike you can get and it was the easiest bike to build.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Right.
So no, they're great.
Yeah. I helped, A-Ray get some bikes through Jim. I knew Jim when I was at Yamaha, he was the road race crew chief. He wasn't a crew chief. I don't know what he was. He was some important person in road race side.
Yeah.
So I knew him from then and I called him and, you know, we based it around a marketing thing and the dude couldn't have been any cooler, couldn't have been any nicer to work with, you know? So I can vouch for that at Jim Roach at Yamaha. So, and in parts are, you get like a lot of times these teams don't have enough parts. I'm thinking more of the guys that do more races than just West Coast, but parts are okay for you.
Yamaha is very, very, very good with parts. And honestly, like going back to Ryan,
mm-hmm.
that's the one thing that I would, I don't want to speak on other teams, but I could just speak upon ours.
Yeah.
That does not get, like, we don't skip on that. We have everything we need. Our truck is actually full of parts, right?
Motors. Yeah. The list is, the list does have things in them.
What's that?
The list of drawers have parts in them because sometimes these teams you open up the list and it's just nothing.
But that's the thing. I mean, Ryan was a guy or a kid at the time that was in one of those trucks that had empty drawers and he's like, this isn't fair.
Yep.
Right? So it goes back to what we talked about earlier. It's like, hey, do you want this much money or do you want this much money? And mm-hmm. when we're at the race in Texas, you'll have a spare motor.
Yep. Yep.
Or a fighting chance at a start. Like, what do you want, man?
Yeah. So for a team like yours, and correct me if I'm wrong, you pay the travel and the rider gets contingency and purse money, which the purse money has been much boosted for the 250 side the last 2 years. And that's basically the deal?
Yes, and then we have salaried our guys this year.
Oh, you do? Okay, nice. Okay, great.
I'll be honest. I fought it kicking and screaming.
Yep.
Because I just, you know, I go back to it's our sport, especially at the bottom end, right? Like to me, it's like it is the factory teams that are pretty obvious. I think there's that little middle ground with Club MX,
mm-hmm.
and then there's everyone else, right?
Yeah.
And we're everyone else. Like, again, we're Goonies, underdogs, whatever you want to call us. we're going to give you a salary, but it's not a lot of salary.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like, we're just giving it because Ryan's like, hey, this is the right thing to do. It's like, okay, cool. I'm fine with it. But it's tough because everyone else is like, no one else is paying. I don't think anyone else is really paying salaries.
Yeah.
Right, at that level.
No, I would think not. You know, I think Cade and those, I think PRMX guys get something, you know, but yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we try to do salary, and we just try to do the best by the guys, really. But you know, we in the past, it's like we've always been like, hey, we think personally, we'd much rather put this money into your bike
mm-hmm.
than like this basically money that you're going to get that's not going to be life changing, right?
Yeah.
And then that too, it's like it's a pretty good indication from a guy. It's like I had a guy before, it was a few years ago, where I'm like, hey, I did, because it was kind of like it was a long time ago. Basically, it was like, hey. I'd rather you just sign yourself up and then I'll just reimburse you like if you make the main event. And they're like, no, we'd rather just get, I'm like, well, are you not going to make the main event? Like, I don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I just don't want to sign you up. Like it saves me time signing you up. You sign yourself up, you're dialed. And then when I cut your check at the end of the week,
yeah,
I'll just make it. So I'll just put in there just like, pay, no, yeah. no, we just want that. I'm like, do you not plan on making main event?
Let me know right now. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's curious to me.
I bet you've been in some weird negotiations over the years for sure. Truck drivers, mechanics, how hard is it to find guys that do that? I mean, you do the 250 West series, you did the arena cross on the off weekend, you have traveled here and there to some races, but again, not enough to keep guys employed full time. But you know, how hard is it to find good mechanics and truck drivers and keep them for the limited series that you do?
So we've been super fortunate, man. I mean, we have a retired truck driver named Ken.
Mm-hmm.
He's been with us since 2018.
Okay, awesome.
Like basically the entire time. Eric, who's wages mechanic, he was worked at Crankworks.
Mm-hmm.
So when I met Ryan, we were both doing, I'm going to do air quotes, contracts for a team, KTM team. That's when I met him.
Yeah.
There was this intern. His name was Eric. And they had a whole bunch of interns from MMI.
Yeah.
And there was this one kid that I noticed every week. He tucked in his shirt. His shoes were always clean.
Yeah.
And he just always did a good job. So I didn't remember his name. So when Ryan and I started the team and in 2018, we had to find a mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
I said to him, hey, what about that kid that always tucked in his shirt and had the clean shoes? Because he had these orange Nikes that had white soles and they were always clean. And I had no idea how he did it, right?
Yeah.
Long story short, we found him. It was Eric. And Eric's been with us since the beginning. He builds our motors now. He still works at Crankworks. Like he's a big part of like all the development we do with Racetech.
Mm-hmm.
And another gentleman named Joe, who used to intern and work for Ryan when he had that shop at the pit. Or no, it was called, I can't remember what it was called, Dirt Lab.
Yeah,
Dirt Lab.
Dirt Lab, yep.
Yeah, years and years ago. So we've honestly, dude, been pretty lucky. Now, don't get me wrong. We've had a few along the way where it's like one and done.
Yep.
We had a guy forget to put gas in the bike.
No.
We had a guy. Oh, yeah. We've had guys that like guys we just brought up to like try to be like pit help. That was like by the end of the day, you're like, hey, we'll just fly you home.
Just
home.
Yeah.
Go home. So we've been lucky, man. We've been very, very lucky.
That's another challenge, right? Because of the finances, because of the schedule you're on, finding guys that, can do the job. So, you're lucky. Sounds like you've stumbled onto that a little bit.
Well, my rule, honestly, dude, with when it comes to like the mechanics or it comes to the truck drivers retired, so it's irrelevant, but like you need to have a job.
Yeah.
Because it has to be like a fairly flexible job to your point. So it's hard, but
yeah,
you know, 2018, Eric didn't have a job. And after that, I'm like, hey, if you're going to work for us, like you need to have a job. So figure it out. That's when he went to Crankworks. He's been ever since because we don't pay enough, first of all. And then being 250 West, like good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you found like obviously we talked about Heartbeat and they're happy. Have you found industry sponsors tightening the checkbook a lot? I kind of hear that from people. I kind of hear, you know, a lot of that. It's not as plentiful as it used to be to try to get, you know, $5,000 out of these guys and $10,000 out of the bar company and et cetera, et cetera.
You mean to compare it to like before COVID?
Yeah, just compared to, yeah, even during COVID when sales were booming.
Yeah, it's funny. Like we've been fortunate, and I think it's because we like kind of handle our stuff on the marketing side where we've just kind of retained our deals forever. Like if you look at our sponsor list, we've had the same sponsors forever, but you definitely hear these stories now where it's like, and it's funny because when COVID started, right, everyone was like, oh my God. So there was that year where if you were signing contracts, you were basically taking a haircut because of COVID, right?
Yeah.
It was just getting started. Then when COVID was happening, people were printing money.
Yeah.
Right? As far as industry. And I remember, like, and I said to myself, it's not rocket science. I'm like, I hope they do their orders properly because this isn't normal, right? And apparently, from what I hear, a lot of people didn't do their ordering properly because now everyone's like, well, we have no money.
Yeah. We're sitting on product. Yeah. We're sitting on inventory. Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know where the money is from when they were printing money for 2 years, right? So it's just interesting.
It is, you know, for sure. It is funny to see that. Fly Racing, RacerX podcast with Chris Elliott from Team Solitaire, Maxis and Renthal and Motorsport.com, all on board with us as well. So at the end of the day, Chris, you got a real job. Ryan's got a real job. Do you put any money in your pocket?
Yes.
Yeah? A little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it took a while to get there. Like first couple of years were pretty tough, and then you know, we definitely focused on just like reinvesting into the program and get better and better, better. But we're at a point now where, like, honestly, if it doesn't look like after checks and balances we're going to make money, I mean, we probably have to really reassess doing it as a whole, right? Because it's just like anything in life, as you grow and grow and grow and the stakes get higher and higher and higher, it takes more time.
Yep. Do you have any ambition to, you know, field the 450 rider, do them all, and do all that? Doesn't seem like you guys do.
Not really. I mean, if someone, not like, you know what I mean? Like, it'd have to come with a lot of money. The problem we're at right now, you know, that we like look at and we acknowledge, it's like guys like Cole and Robbie. I mean, for outside of factory riders, they're the best case scenario, right? They're top 10 guys. They're just on the verge of whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are. To take that next step as a team, it's not another $100,000. It's another million. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's no next little step to take for us. It's either all in or all out. And for me, like, I've had other opportunities within the industry over the years to do certain things, but I've always just like, you know, this is our team, right? Like, it's not perfect. It's smaller. It's like a crazy little circus, but it's our circus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like what it is, and it allows me to be involved and to like always have a goal and strive for more and more. But again, we're kind of at that spot right now where it's like, you know, I think like if anything, what we do next is I think we probably have the 250 West program, but field an arena cross effort too.
I was just going to,
I don't think we'd ever do the full series.
Yeah. That's where I was going to dive into it. You've shown up at some arena crosses. You brought your riders in there. You were just at the Prescott one as well during the off week. What do you think of that series? How is it? Robbie got on the box a bunch, so that was good.
Yeah, I like it a lot, man. I think as from a fan point of view, like, it's nuts. It's so fast paced, and there's no real lag or break in between any of the program.
Mm-hmm.
So from a fan, it's a really cool product. From a race team, it's going to sound like I'm complaining again, but I'm not, I promise. It's cool to go to a series and like the TV wants to talk to you and make sure that you're doing
it. Yeah.
Like, and it's the problem that, like, you know, Al and I and Nancy from Heartbeat talk about all the time. It's like 250 West, it's great because, and the biggest thing with Supercross is when you're getting back to a team point of view, and I'm shooting out sponsors and I'm trying to get sponsors and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. You basically have a trade show in the pits from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. every Saturday with 20 to 30,000 people, right?
Yep.
And that's honestly how I pitch my team, right? And then with Arena Cross, it's like, hey, when we go there, we're one of the guys, right?
Yeah.
We're in opening ceremonies. We are on the box. We're talking on TV. So when it comes to deciding what you should do as far as a team, it's like, they do that pit party on Saturday night at 6 o'clock at Arena Cross.
Okay.
You basically talk to and see and have an interaction with every fan that's in that building because they can walk the track. They do the autograph session. There's a tangible to that. And then when it comes to TV, it's like, hey, do you want a minute a month on Peacock or NBC? Or do you want 20 minutes on Friday night on MAV
TV. On MAV TV, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I'm not the person that makes that decision, but it's definitely something that like kind of piques my interest and go, huh.
Yeah, I could see in your shoes where you'd be like, well, yeah, what do we want to do here? You know, especially Robbie McCrory's doing a good job bringing back Arena Cross, and they're trying to make it something. Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma for you. What does Heartbeat guy say?
They like it a lot.
Do they? Yep.
They like it a lot. I think, like, you know, for them, like Supercross, and for us too, like Supercross, let's not kid ourselves. Supercross is the peak of the sport, right? It's
yeah.
The semis, it's the pageantry, it's everything. So I think, like, I don't think we'd ever get away from that unless a 250 West regions disappeared for some reason.
Could you do an Arena Cross with like a truck and trailer? You know?
I don't think, for sure. So
you know what I mean?
They actually, yeah, definitely. So that's kind of, so what they do, it's kind of interesting. They have the crates like World Supercross has.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And they're actually doing transportation for people that want to buy into it.
Oh.
So there is a possibility to do that. So it's been interesting to see the how it's gone the last couple of years, of how it's grown and what they're trying to do and how they're trying to do it. And they're definitely onto something because, yeah, you definitely – to do that series – the only downfall is a lot of those arenas are like not in the middle of nowhere, but it's like, hey, if you're going to Madison, you probably want to fly into Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you want to, and the problem is you race Fridays. So again, you need a mechanic that is going to be there Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
And then you race Friday. And then on Saturday when they're doing amateurs, you tear down or do your build, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you find someone, say like Cole Thompson, who wants to go on a 450 and just throw a couple of 450s in that crate, it's pretty hands off.
Yeah.
So I'd be open to do something like that.
Yeah, interesting. So maybe are we breaking news here? 2025 Arena Cross effort for Heartbeat Solitaire?
No. I mean, honestly, in a perfect world, that's my goal.
Yep.
I do want to do both. I think even in the last 2 years, I've seen how much they've grown. I've seen what they're planning. And they've honestly, they have a small little group of people too.
Mm-hmm.
But everything that they've said they're going to do, they've executed on.
Yeah.
And they've gotten better every year. And the I watch the TV people. I watch the crew. I have no idea how they do what they do. Like, as far as the execution of the day goes, it doesn't seem like there's enough people. It does not compute to me, but they make it happen. So yeah, we definitely want to be a part of it.
A big part of your presence, social media wise, and I'm assuming it's you, it's a real witty Twitter account. You're very interactive with fans, followers. Social media game is strong for the Team Solitaire guys. How much do you focus on that? How important is it to you? What's been the feedback on that? Like, you know, there's also been, you guys have had some hot takes on social media as well. Little jabs here and there, funny stuff. Social media been good for you, I think, overall though, right?
Yeah, I think a big part of our presence, even at the races, is just fan interaction, right?
Yep.
Like, we're the team that if, like, you want to walk up to one of the mechanics and ask them what the problem that you have with your Yamaha. I mean, we're probably that team. And as long as the guys aren't doing an engine swap, if they're just wiping down the rims, I mean, they're going to sit there and talk to you forever.
Mm-hmm.
Same deal with social media. I mean, like, we're super accessible, you know, DMs, whatever you guys want. I mean, we're there. And I think that's what's helped us grow over the years, is just like not being that team that takes it too serious. Like,
mm-hmm.
And you know this, and I know this, but if people knew how unprofessional, but like how not big of a deal it is, then they laugh, right?
Yeah,
it's not a big deal. I promise. And like, maybe at the top factory level it's a big deal, and I understand how they can be serious and all, you know, sometimes cranky aren't too good, but like for what we're talking about, come by and say hi.
Yeah,
talk to us on Twitter and yeah, so right. For us, I mean, marketing and social media honestly has been everything, and it's what's allowed us to really grow into what we've been.
Good job on the retro look, by the way. Great job. 96 Yamaha looks, really good. Hey, the Liat guys, they're sponsored the Re-Raceables podcast for me, and so they're on board with us. Obviously, we're tight with the Fly dudes, but speaking of Liat, they've been with you for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it just goes back to what we said earlier. Like,
yeah.
The same deal we are with the riders, we're with our sponsors. Like,
yeah.
If we tell you we're going to do it, we're going to do it, and we're pretty reasonable, right? And the 96 retro thing, like, I can't even take credit for that. The only reason why we did that is because Star did such a good job in the summertime. We're like, we're not going back to that look.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They killed it. So yep. I'm like,
probably good idea.
Bradshaw,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Bradshaw, obviously iconic. And the helmet was really rad. And mm-hmm. we were able to kind of merge in with a mountain bike look from their current line and mm-hmm. kind of build it to a moto chassis. And mm-hmm. and that's what we did there.
Yeah, no, yeah,
Liat,
really good.
Liat's been great. Liat's been great. And like the crazy part about Liat is we signed with Liat, gosh, man, like 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And they've grown so much since then. And they also moved their warehouse to 20 minutes from my house. So their North American distribution, I just go there now.
Yeah, perfect. That's nice.
So it's great.
Pivoting to you, you're a realtor up in Reno. You're married. You got kids? You got kids?
Yeah, a couple. So I got two daughters.
Two kids. How do you do this? How do you do it personally? How do you make sure, you know, you're doing your job as a realtor and balancing home life and in balancing the flying and the race team and all of this? I mean, the same question goes for Ryan as well, but man, it's a lot to juggle, huh?
We just got rad wives.
Yeah, really, right?
Really, really supportive rad wives, and honestly, family. Because like, you know, like my aunt's wife will come up and watch the kids. If my wife is a nurse, she works at the VA, so she works nights. So
yeah,
it works out to where I can travel a lot. But it kind of goes back to your previous question. I mean, yeah, we never really do a 450 or anything like that because, unless it was tons of money and it was a no-brainer,
mm-hmm.
we do have all this going on, right? Like, I got young kids and soccer, gymnastics, tap. With work, it's honestly, again, it's pretty simple. Like, real estate tends to kind of slow down once the holidays start in mm-hmm. around Thanksgiving.
Yep.
And then, depending on the weather, you're not really kicking back up into full gear until March. So I could pretty much, for lack of a better term, fake my way through it for a few months.
Yeah, yeah.
While we're traveling a lot and then get back to it.
You're like in the manager's tower and you're like, yeah, listen, 3-bedroom condo. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's fantastic. And you're like, oh, good lap time.
Yeah, no, it exactly. And like, honestly, I haven't really, like my wife being super supportive and cool. Same with my brokers. Like they understand and they're all stoked on it. And
yep.
They're supportive.
What's your personal journey? Like you mentioned Thunder Bay, home of Shane Drew.
Yeah, dude.
Not far from Winnipeg, where I'm from. What's your personal journey to the sport? From Canada to Reno and all of that?
So it's kind of like it's a two-part journey. I mean, the first part of the journey, obviously, I was born in Thunder Bay. I grew up in a small little township called Kaministiquia. Mm-hmm. Like, I rode all the same gravel pit Shane rode,
yep.
Which is funny now because now we talk a lot, and he's such a rad guy. And I remember being at races when I was a kid, and people – you know how, like, there's that one guy that left and did something? And
yeah.
That was that around the fire pit on Friday night. Shane's doing this, or when I go to California, I see Shane, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So now being here, now me and Shane talking, it's pretty funny to look back at that. But no, just like anyone else, like I had a dad who was into dirt bikes when he was younger. So I started a little late in dirt bikes. Being Canadian, I could skate before I could walk. So my dad surprised me when I was like 13 with tickets to the Minneapolis Supercross.
Oh, yeah.
And that was like no fear McGrath.
Okay.
So,
yep. What year?
You know, dude, I don't know. Maybe it was like 98, 99, 2000. I have to look back. Maybe 2000.
Okay.
Maybe 99. Right.
Well, 99, but, I was there with Ferry, and McGrath was one of the loudest I've ever heard a stadium. McGrath was awesome. People loved him.
Did he win or get third? McGrath?
I don't remember.
I think that was it, but it was no fear. And like, what's crazy about what, it's funny what I do now. It's like, so when I started riding at 13, but what I fell in love with at the Metrodome that night was kind of like the pageantry of Supercross mm-hmm. and like the gear. And so like I raced after that and I was never fast, but I cared more about like putting stickers on my chest protector,
mm-hmm.
you know, in my helmet. Like I'd go to Millville in the summers, get all the free stickers. And then that's how I would decorate my chest protector the next
year.
Right?
Yeah.
So I raced for, I don't know, like 5 or 6 years. I did my wrist in really bad my intermediate year. And mm-hmm. then I kind of just, I had played hockey the whole time, and this is where my story gets weird, where it all started making sense. So I did my lunate bone. They had to cut like half my range of motion off and anchor my ligaments to the bones and blah, blah, blah. So mm-hmm. like it was really hard to ride, basically.
Yep.
So I was like, I had 1 year left of junior hockey, and the team I was playing for had just sold to like some small little town in Ontario. So I'm like, I'm not going there. There's no chance. I don't know what made me want to do this, but I'm like, I'm going to go look in the Western States to see if there's somewhere I could play hockey.
Mm-hmm.
So I got my release from my team. I signed with the team in Sacramento, the WSHL, and I left just out of a whim. Like if Jeez, anyone knew yeah, me, they'd yeah. be like, I didn't be like, I don't know why he did that or how. I just didn't want to get stuck. There's not really a way to say this without like sounding kind of rude, but like a lot of times what happens in those smaller towns, maybe in America too, I don't know, but me specifically knowing in Canada, it's like at a certain point in time, if you were going to go play hockey somewhere, you were probably going to go to trade school, buy a nice truck, and just kind of strap it.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you're going to do, right?
Yeah.
I just, me and Shane talk about this and we laugh. It's like, I was not doing that. There was zero chance. So I laughed and I joked with my mom. I'm like, hey, I'm going to meet a girl. I'm going to marry her. And I'm not coming back ever, right? So I did meet my wife. I didn't marry her. But so I met my wife when I was playing hockey down there. She came back to Thunder Bay. She finished nursing school. But honestly, like 2-3 years into winters on Lake Superior, she's
hold
like,
hold on, yeah, wait, no. You met your wife in Sacramento?
Yeah, Rockland. Yeah,
Sacramento. But she went to Thunder Bay to finish school?
To finish nursing school, yeah.
What? I don't get that.
I'm a good talker.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Right? Okay. I know, dude. She's crazy. So, but in that time, like, I kind of gave up on dirt bikes. Like, I didn't really follow it. I didn't really care. I was like, yeah, whatever. When she came back to Thunder Bay, a couple years had gone by, and I'm like, yeah, there's zero chance she's living here. So I better figure this out, right? So that's around the time when I probably started contacting you and I ultimately met you. I was like, for some reason, and again, I was like never good at writing in school or I didn't do anything to do with it, but I just got into like first blogging.
Yeah.
And I like seeing people's reactions to my blog. So eventually I'm like, hey, I'm going to write. So I started writing stuff for Direct Motocross.
Mm-hmm.
Basically any website that would let me write. I did some motocross content.
And was I doing Direct Motocross then?
So you were kind of Direct Motocross. Yeah, you were Direct Motocross and I think Racer X.
Okay, yep.
This would have been around like 2011, 2010, yep. 2010, 11, 12. And so I was – eventually I had too much content. Nobody wanted it. So – and so you'll get a kick out of this. So when I moved back –
Hey, that's literally why I started Pulp, by the way. I had content that Racer X was like, we're not running an article about Ross Peterson. So yeah, beat it. And then I'm like, okay, I'm starting my own site. That's literally why I started it. Yeah.
Yeah. So same here. So you'll get a kick out of this. So when I went back after playing hockey, right? So I had done 2 years of college and I went back to Canada after playing hockey. I got a job at Purelator Courier.
Yep. Which so is like FedEx for exactly. People who are listening. Right.
Yeah. Again, like nice little union job. It was great. It was like owned by the government, but I was like, yeah, this isn't for me. Right. But I worked there up until the time I left to move back here. So I would be working for Purelator in the day, and then I'd come home and I would just write like crazy, right? So eventually I had too much content, so I started fmxnews.com.
Mm-hmm.
So fmxnews.com started in probably, 3 weeks, a month later,
mm-hmm.
Ryan Leyba from ESPN contacted me.
Okay.
And just said, hey, I like your stuff. Like, it does great if you ever, you know, just saying hi. Keep me in the loop. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, that was weird. So then, like, another month went by and he contacted me again. He said, hey, I'm in the need of an article. Can you do a gear review? I'm like, huh.
No.
Okay. So I did a gear review. It was for, I don't know if you remember, it was called Rex Racing. It was the first time in Canada where they started making, like, custom gear.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had to make a custom set of gear for me. Put that, gave it to Leyba. I mean, honestly, Leyba probably changed every word in my article. but after that, for the next, I think like 5 years, I wrote for ESPN.
Yeah.
And it kind of allowed me to transition from being in Canada over to the States.
And the wife is from Reno or why Reno?
So she's from Lincoln or Rockland, California. She was born in San Jose.
Okay.
Reno, because when we first moved back in 2014, she's a nurse. The cost of living in California compared to the cost of living up in Northern Nevada, and it's 2 hours away, was just not even on the same planet. So we moved here just because of like how cheap it was to live here compared to what she could make, right?
Right.
And then we lucked out, man, because like we moved here, and then shortly after that, like the Tesla Gigafactory got built. Like this place just blew up like crazy. So we like looking back now. I mean, like we couldn't even afford to live here now if we moved here, but we moved here at the right time.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's interesting.
Also,
by the way, you forgot Shane Drew escaped Thunder Bay. You did as well. And you forgot about Earl, the squirrel Reimer. Also, great rider.
Are you really saying that word? Okay, so can I tell you? We have time, right? Can I tell you a story?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you a quick story.
He's not quite Thunder Bay Vermilion. I don't know where Vermilion is, but yeah, go ahead. Tell the
story.
He
may as well be. So, okay. So here's my story. So yeah. People ask me like, oh, you know, were you fast when you were young? I'm like, no.
Yeah.
And just so people in Canada understand, there's always levels to this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like if you go watch a local 65 class in Southern California, you're like, oh my God. So I was racing a race on Saturday in Pocan, Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
The Friday night, an old F-150 pulls up with two stock RM125s in the back.
Mm-hmm.
How the story goes, I was young, so I don't remember this part. Earl Reimer partook in Friday activities.
Yes. Yep. Okay.
The next day, we're all in the line for, I think I was like maybe 125 junior to me at the time, but we're all in the line. We all go together. He's nowhere to be seen. He's mm-hmm. not going to practice, right? So he comes out, finally gets himself out of the truck. He goes to the line, gate drops. He proceeds to beat the absolute brakes off of all of our pros, right?
Yeah, yeah, that sounds about right.
I don't know if
he
rode the track. He might have, and on a 125 against 450s, I don't think he ever rode the track. So that's fine. So that night after the race, like I'm like driving in the truck. So that night we left and we're going to a place called Beaujolais, Manitoba, right?
Oh, I know where that is, yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like an outdoor, like arena crossy style thing. And I'm like, I'm rethinking every life choice I've ever made because I'm like, I can't believe how bad he just beat all those guys.
Yeah.
Who I thought were fast.
Yeah. And this dude went hard, yeah. Sent it on Friday night.
He probably could have got a DUI on his bike. Like he just mm-hmm. full throttle. So Saturday, so then Sunday we're in Beaujolais. And we wake up in the morning and we're pitted next to Tucker Hibbert. So this is at the time when like Tucker Hibbert was like winning Canadian motos.
Yeah.
For a CMRC class.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh geez, like I wonder how this is gonna go. Tucker absolutely mopped the floor with them, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't even close. And I'm like, oh my God. The following weekend, we go to Millville.
Mm-hmm.
Hibbert, I think he maybe made it into the motos.
Yeah.
Through the LCQ.
Right. Right.
So it's like, it's just a funny story that I tell people. It's like, hey, like, you know, if you're in Thunder Bay, Ontario, and you're thinking about mortgaging your house to buy your kid another 65 or a trailer, don't do that.
Yeah.
Because you have no idea.
Yeah. Listen, Shane scored points in national motos. Shane was legit. Earl was good too. Yeah. That's my era. Those are my guys.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, Earl is a better racer than I ever was, but I kept him in sight a few times.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. But Earl was good. And it's amazing that he still rides.
That's crazy.
So yeah, that is an interesting path for sure. I do remember you being the FMX guy for Direct Motocross. I didn't know you, but I think you sent me some stuff and we put it on. It was interesting path. I think I lost touch for a while and then you just reappeared. Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, well,
I'm trying to put it all together a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, because like so I mean when ESPN kind of scooped me up and yep. I got away from Direct Motocross.
Yeah.
And obviously ESPN was they paid you.
Yeah.
So my effort it's kind of like what you do with Pulp. Like I just did all the content I could possibly do.
Yeah.
Whatever I could get to ESPN they would take. And if not, it went up on FMX News.
Yeah.
Obviously that sport was dying, right? So like that's why it's crazy, like this sport is niche, right? And that's people always go, this now. I'm like, hey, it's kind of good it's niche because it allows people that want to be involved that necessarily wouldn't be involved.
Yeah, like there's a lack of professionalism at times. And like you said, it's not that big of a deal. And that's all true. But that also is advantageous to getting into it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I had no reason, I should not have written for ESPN. That is ridiculous. People go to school to do that, right? And I wasn't a good writer.
Yeah.
They just had really good editors.
Yeah.
And no one else dumb enough to like focus a career in FMX.
Yeah. Yeah, really,
but
right?
Part two of that story was when I popped back up was because, so the last story I ever wrote for ESPN was about basically Villopoto retiring.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, they decided to get rid of their sports-specific blogs and just focus on, like, X Games.
Yeah.
So in that time, I had met Shane Ruiz, who was from – he did, like, all the marketing for, like, Metal Militia over the years and mm-hmm. La Jolla Group, who owned a bunch of moto companies. So he contracted me to handle all the – basically, like, either month-long or weekend-long or whatever contracts for all kinds of companies. I mean, we did campaigns for, like, Sony, Replay XD, a Super Bowl campaign, World Championship Car Racing. And like, honestly, dude, like all I would do was that I would have photographers that have me on a Dropbox I have live feeds to things, and I would run like social media accounts remotely.
Okay.
So, but like, we also like, I think in 2000, gosh, was it 14 or am I not even 15? Like, I did one industry socials. We did a contract with O'Neill Socials. We did like all kinds of stuff that we just, it was like in the background, third party, right? So what happened, how I met Ryan through that was going into 16, he said, hey, why don't you try to see if you can get a couple of these 250 West teams as contracts?
Sure.
We'll run their media. You could do it in your sleep. It'll be fine. Through that, we ended up working together a lot. And then that's when we kind of said, hey, if we're going to do this, like, we might as well just do our own team.
That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is funny. By the way, too, when people, getting back to Shane Drew, when people get mad at me for things I write or say, I always say blame Shane Drew because he literally got me my start as a mechanic. Like,
did
I
really?
Yeah, I wanted to be a mechanic. He was trying to find me a job because he was working for Kyle Lewis and at Nolene. And then he was like, well, no one's going to hire you like from a couch in Winnipeg. So come down here and hang with me and meet people. And I did. I hung with him for 3 weeks. I met a guy. I got a job and I never went home. Kind of like what you did. So yes. I always tell people, blame Shane Drew for like letting me stay with him and driving me around for weeks.
So how did you meet him though?
Like racing in Manitoba. Yeah, he lived in Winnipeg, right? And race in Manitoba. He's older than I am, but yeah, we knew each other, you know, from just racing. So
that's funny.
Yeah, so I go way back with Shane. I mean, he raced in Manitoba for years and years and years, right? As he was chasing the Canadian scene. So
yeah,
blame Shane Drew, everybody who gets mad at me. So,
well, I always tell people though too, like when they're like, "Oh, it's so cool," you know, I'm like, honestly, do you know who Shane Drew is? Like Shane's done a lot of really, really cool things in the sport, and he's definitely like he's like stays out of the limelight, but he's low key like,
yeah,
he's a bad dude.
Yeah, he's worked with Factory Yamaha, Factory Honda. He's back at Honda now. Yeah, no, he's done a lot of things. Tortelli's mechanic for a long time. So, and I knew him, yeah, when he raced, and he was a great rider as well. So, Chris Elliott here on the Fly Racing Racer X podcast. Again, thank you to folks at Fly Racing for making it happen. FlyRacing.com, 25 years of Fly. MaxisMotorsport.com as well. And, of course, the guys at Rental, of course. Okay, so going ahead, looking forward, do you have anybody for under contract for next year? Or are both Cole and Robbie one-year deals, and then you got to start the process over and see how it goes?
Yeah, they're both on one-year deals.
Yep.
But I think like I have a pretty good finger on the pulse of like, I mean, the goal would be to have Robbie back.
Yep.
And Cole back in some capacity, not sure what yet. And then I kind of want to go back to, we might want to go grab a third guy, like a younger guy.
Yep. Yeah. You had Thury for a little bit, right? Thury last year.
Yeah, we had Thury last year and we were supposed to have Thury this year. He was going to run 250 East for us, but he ended up getting a better offer to go do PRMX, and we just kind of let him. We're like, hey, dude, of course. Like, we weren't going to do much for him. We really – I don't know if you've ever talked to him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've had him on the show. He's a really nice guy. Yeah.
Oh, so likable. Yeah. And he had such a bad year last year, and, like, we just said, like, hey, obviously, you know, you're not necessarily going to be part of the 250 West program, mm-hmm. but if there's something we could do for you on the East, let's do it and just kind of make sure – just kind of look out for him. And then when the PRMX thing came up, it was like, absolutely, dude, go do that. Like, Bailey, his dog, needed a place to stay during the day. He couldn't be out of the van or anything like that.
So. Yeah, there we go, right? And you mentioned a few times, and I've talked to you privately about this, and you know, you do have good motors, good suspension. You've worked with the guys at Race Tech for a while as well over the years. You've used some different motor guys. That's stuff that you have to pay for, I would guess, right? You get a little bit of a deal on it, but you need to pay for it?
We do pay for some of our Race Tech stuff.
Yep.
But what it does is it allows – In 18 or 19, when we had Harrison, I mean, we had an absolute nightmare year with motors,
mm-hmm.
and we ended up on like three different motors. And, you know, going back to giving Ryan credit, it's like, Ryan's like, you know what, dude, if that ever happens again, like I need to like look myself in the face and know that I did it. Like I can't keep allowing this to happen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, honestly, Andrew at Race Tech, Ryan and our one mechanic, Eric, do all the development.
Yep.
Right. And it goes back to, hey, we're going to build a really competitive bike, but be also like just on the fat and be safe. Right. Like,
yeah.
Last time we had Wageman, he, you know, that was your Pulp MX race.
Oh,
and
yeah.
it was gnarly. And dude, it was a freak part that it was a freak deal with a part, but like that part will never be on our motor again. Right.
Yep.
So it's just it's nice having Ryan oversee that, and just like it's us. That's where the, you know, it stops just with us. That's why we do it with Race Tech, and they're really cool about like yeah, we pay for some stuff, but they put in so much more time than they have to when it comes to development. Mm-hmm. Like, we have a 450 at Race Tech right now, and he's just working on it for us and getting it ready for a couple of nationals. And he does it because he loves it and he likes us.
Yeah, I like what you guys stand for. And Ryan's been there as a racer, probably used some substandard parts over the years that broke on him, and he ate shit. And like you said, he kind of knows that part of it. And I like what you guys have always said. This goes back, you know, years where you're like, we're going to give you a motorcycle that's going to be good. Like, you know, we're going to put everything we can to make your motorcycle good. We're not going to partner with people that, you know, give us some money, but the product isn't good, which happens a lot out there, more than fans realize, where you run some part, you run some link, you run some suspension shop because they're paying you and it ain't that good. So,
yeah. Or, you know, like I've had a few guys that I've talked about this, and I'm like, hey man, you got to look out for yourself. Like, okay, Johnny Joe's motor wants to build your motor, right? Johnny Joe wants you to yank a hole shot, and he's going to build you a ticking time bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so it's on you as a rider or as a team to make sure that they're not only building you a good competitive bike, but a safe bike.
Yep.
And make sure everyone's in full understanding of the intervals and everything to do with that. And that's where, like, Ryan's kind of like the secret weapon in that. It's like, I don't have to worry about that.
Yep.
I know he's on all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, you know, again, for teams of your level, doesn't always happen. So, you know?
Oh, dude, I've bitten my tongue 14 times during this podcast because, like, but the problem is riders never want to call stuff out.
No.
So I'm not going to say it either, but sometimes I look at those guys and I just shake my head and be like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why don't you say something? Because you know what?
Yeah.
You guys, like, you know, everyone talks about union or this or that or sport this. Why don't you start looking out for each other? Like, if you say something, it won't happen to the next guy and the next guy and the next guy.
I've interviewed people and then gotten texts from riders and been like, I can't believe you talked to that guy. He owes me all the money, or he did this or whatever. And I've been like, okay, like, I believe you, rider, but I don't know for sure because I don't have access to your contract / you know, terms of payment. But I'll tell you what, Ryder, I will give you a platform for thousands and thousands and thousands of people to tell your side of the story. And, you know, if you feel like wrong, then this person shouldn't be, this person should be exposed. And let's face it, there's actually some crooked people and some people that have done other people really dirty. But Chris, every time I ask these riders, they're like, no. And I've been like, okay, well then don't yell at me. You know what I mean? Don't yell at me for talking to this person because while I believe you that this person screwed you over, I don't know that. And so I can't go off that. And these riders won't talk. I can think of some big names in the back of my head right now that are like, were not happy with me. And I'm like, but yet did not want to tell the story. And it's not like I'm looking for the scandalous side of it. I'm just saying, if you want to blow this person out, feel free. I'll give you the platform.
Well, I laugh sometimes because I'll listen to your podcast with someone and I know that they haven't been paid in 6 months.
Yeah.
And they're like telling you, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, I just shake my head. And I know you know.
Yeah.
And I know you're not going to say anything.
No, it's not my place to. Yeah, because I don't know the facts, right? I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
So, and it goes on more than people know, like you said, Chris. It goes on, you know.
I laugh. My favorite thing is, like I said, like, over the years, man, we've gone without, right? Because we just, from the race team account, we couldn't afford it, right? So, like, we haven't always had the best stuff. And, like, sometimes I'd watch some – and, like, I have perspective, right? Because I'm closer to 40 than I am 30 now. And, like, I'm married. I have my house, my kids. I come back to my job. So it's, like, it's a small part of my being, right? But I'll be – you know, I'll be rolling up my – like, a couple years ago, I'd be rolling up my, like, raggedy – canopy cover and like I'd have a couple guys walk by the cags on our team and like kind of smirk at us because I could tell they're like, oh yeah, this team, right? And I'm thinking, like, you haven't been paid in 5 weeks. I know that, and you're smiling at us, and I know your situation. So you could smile at us all you want or give us that smirk, I don't care.
Yeah,
because, like, I know. And you know what, like, the thing that kind of drives me crazy about some other teams too, and it's like, and it's not an excuse, and it's not, it's kind of complaining. It's like, hey, whatever it is, what it is. If you want a better situation, then you should just do it. But it's like these teams that, like, go on record that say they spend, like, you know, $500,000 their own money or over budget. And I'm like, well, that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, you spend so for us, it's like we choose to do it that way. Hey, it's dollar in, dollar out. And then you hear someone say, oh, that person's doing a great job. And they go on record and say, yeah, I spent $1 million of your own money. It's like, so you're spending $1 million of your own money outside of the budget that you get. And people say you do a good job. but like, I don't understand. I don't understand. It's just, it's crazy. It's fun that way, but it's also the game, right? It's like, those are the same companies that like take a discount on their gear deals because they have money and they just spend their own money, and then it affects everyone else's gear deals. And it just ends up eating the sport, or not the sport, the smaller teams just end up eating themselves that way. And I just shake my head at everyone. I'm like, you guys, what are you doing?
There's a couple teams right now in the pits. I don't know how they do it. It doesn't make sense to me, the money they're spending and going right. I don't know how they're doing it. I don't know how it's working. I think they're robbing from some retirement account or something. I don't know.
Yeah. You want to go over to some of those places, like some of the teams. And it's, you know what, it comes from a place of, I want to say a good place, like they mean well and they want to do it and they're having fun. But it's like, I know I've been around and I could tell, I want to go there and be like, hey, just so you know, you're going to spend your retirement or you're going to spend all your money. Maybe you don't have kids. I don't know. But eventually you're going to realize that, like, it's not a good idea.
Yeah.
And it goes, I'm not speaking on behalf of our guys, but like over the years, you know, we have two really good guys right now, maybe because they're veterans, they come from good families. We've known them for a long time, but I never feel like they're not thankful for what we do. Like they're great kids, great guys. We've had kids over the years where I want to burn the truck down because you're doing all this work. And you're not spending your own money, but there's a thing in life called sweat equity, right? And that's what I've always told Ryan. I'm like, the minute we start spending our own money, I'm out, because we spend our own money in a sense already in the thing of sweat equity, right? Like I could be home making money, or I could be home bettering whatever, but instead we're doing this, right? So when you're spending all that time and you're spending that money and effort, and then you have riders that don't appreciate it or think they're Ricky Carmichael, but they're 18th in the main event, and they think that if you don't do this, they're not going to get to 14th, and they don't understand that 14th means absolutely nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be pretty exhausting. So seeing these new guys come in with their fun movers or trucks, maybe they're a construction company that had a transport. It's like, hey, let's buy a trailer and go racing. It's just like,
guys,
come on.
You know, on top of that, talking about what we've talked about this whole show, your team isn't for everybody, rider-wise. It's not for everybody.
No.
Like, you have to, you know, like you said, like, hey, man, we're not curing cancer here. So if you think that, you know, this is a factory team here, and you're going to get catered to, and you're not, and maybe this isn't a good fit, you know? So.
Yeah. And to be fair, they are pretty catered to. It's just, we're pretty realistic in like the big scope of life. Like day to day, we do like they have nothing to worry about, right? Like in race day, they have nothing to worry about. Like, I think we have a pretty professional program. I just mean like in the big scope of life, like, if you want to argue with me, like if we're in a contract negotiation, if you want to argue about $5,000, I'm not going to take you serious, because that's not even property tax for some people.
Yeah.
So you think you know what I mean? Like, that's what you're worried about? Then this is the place for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? But if you want to argue with me about a third bike or something else, or suspension or whatever, I'm all here for that. But if you're not first and foremost for your career and what you're trying to do, and you're worried about grand, then this is definitely not the place for you.
Yeah. Heartbeat, Yamaha, Team Solitaire, Chris Elliott. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I think people will really dig this story of yourself and Ryan making a small independent team work, the trials and tribulations of it, the positives of it, and how you do it. I think there's some good stuff in here, man, and I've always wanted to catch up with you and do one of these with you to just, get behind the scenes a little bit. I mean, obviously, we're friends. We talk a lot. But, good to put it on a podcast, man. So
I appreciate you, man. If anybody wants to reach out, they know where to find me.
Sounds good. Thanks, Chris. We'll talk to you soon, man.
All right, man. Ciao.
See you.
This has been the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, Motorsport.com, and Kuba Links on RacerXOnline.com. Thanks for listening and supporting our partners. Don't change the air. Don't change the air.